everyone, and welcome to the fourth episode of Pipettes to Patients, the podcast where we bridge the gap between cutting-edge science and the people that it's meant to serve. I'm Dr. Simone, a radiation oncologist and researcher, and in today's episode, we're diving into the journey of becoming a physician and a cancer researcher. What does it take to walk the path from textbooks and lab benches to patient care and discovery? From the classroom to the clinic, from pipettes to patients, we'll be exploring the training, the challenges, and the rewards of dedicating your life to medicine and research. Whether you're a student dreaming of medical school, a future scientist drawn to the lab, or simply curious about how we train the next generation of healers and innovators, this episode is for you. On this episode, I had the pleasure of interviewing two medical students here at Upstate Medical University. Miriam Franks is a third-year medical student who chose a non-traditional path to becoming a medical oncologist. And Kevin Lin is one of our MD-PhD students who's currently working on his thesis project in the lab of Dr. Leszek Katula in the Department of Urology. With those brief introductions, let's get into this month's fun episode, examining the training pathways, challenges, and skill sets required to become a physician or cancer researcher, and how these formative experiences ultimately shape clinical practice and scientific advancement. Welcome to the fourth episode of Pipettes to Patients. I'm really excited today because August doesn't have a particular cancer awareness theme. So I decided that I really wanted to do a podcast focused on training for becoming an oncology researcher in two different ways. So I have two oncologists in training, we'll call them, and I'm going to have you guys just introduce yourselves if you don't mind. Okay, so Miriam, you can go first.
Hi, I'm Miriam. I'm a third-year medical student. I'm in the three-year program, so I'll graduate next year, and then I'm doing my internal medicine residency here.
And Kevin, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kevin. I am a fifth-year MD-PhD student, so this is year 5 out of 8. I should be graduating in 2029 or so. My PhD is currently with the Department of Urology studying prostate cancer, and we'll see where I end up afterwards.
Sounds good. And you guys actually sort of accidentally know each other as well. Is that right?
Yeah. Kevin taught me in lab. It like literally taught me everything. So we were working on a research project together.
I think she's being humble. She did come with quite a few skills, but yeah, definitely. She was part of our lab for a little bit and did some good work with us. So
very cool. Yeah. That's definitely one of the things that, I think people don't necessarily get training on becoming a teacher. It sort of gets like thrown upon us. So Kevin, what are some of the things that you love about kind of teaching the younger students in the lab?
I think it's a very fun and rewarding process. I've been fortunate to have a lot of good mentors in my life who've taught me everything from basic pipetting all the way to doing kind of complex statistical analyses and advanced complicated research techniques. And so to be able to kind of pass that forward, pass the torch onto younger students and train them from everything from the basics to kind of thinking like a real scientist is a lot of fun.
And Miriam, I know you are probably going to end up a little bit more clinical probably than Kevin is, but what do you think were some valuable things that you learned in the lab that you can kind of move forward into your practice?
I think like data analysis has been super important, like Kevin was saying, just because like with oncology, there's always new like clinical trials and things that are coming out. So you have to be able to evaluate the data on your own and kind of see like, would this drug make sense for this patient or whatever? And being able to like think critically about the results and apply that to clinical situations is important. And I mean, things were a little bit more like wet lab when we were working together. So I didn't have that like experience, but just having like the background of data analysis and like being able to evaluate statistics and stuff like that is, I think, something that's super important for the future.
And you guys obviously both chose oncology to go into, at least for now, right, Kevin? We don't know where you'll end up, but
we'll see. Yeah.
So can you guys give us, Miriam, why don't you tell us why did you choose oncology as a specialty?
Yeah, so I in high school started on this research project looking at mixed lineage leukemia. And we were seeing if like we could use CRISPR-Cas9 to knock out the MLL gene. And I really liked that type of research. I thought it was super cool and like super groundbreaking, I guess. And I didn't really know anything about cancer in high school. And then you get like all like the fundamentals, like the hallmarks of cancer, you take all the classes. And I was like, oh, I really like this. I continued researching cancer in undergrad. I worked on tumor overexpressed gene protein in undergrad. And so I thought that it was a field that is always changing and I really liked it. And then I shadowed some clinicians as well. And I thought this is what I want to do in the future.
Cancer is like fascinating. And I know I'm an oncologist, but it really is. I mean, think about it. And it's just wild, like the number of things that it can do. And then the number of things that we can do, right, as clinicians, as researchers, to help people. And so, yeah, I love oncology too. Kevin, why did you choose oncology research?
I, like Miriam, was very fortunate to get my first taste of cancer research in high school and was able to kind of shadow some cancer researchers in a lab studying gastrointestinal stromal tumors. In that lab, they were trying to understand how those cancers are able to develop resistance to therapy and potential new targets to target or to focus on once initial kind of current stage therapies inevitably become not very effective. And so the idea that as someone in the lab, we can help discover the pathways to target for novel therapies or find ways of repurposing existing medications to treat tumors of different kinds made kind of the day-to-day experience of being in lab feel very fruitful and rewarding. And it also kind of gave me a feeling that I was able to do something to kind of help the fight against cancer and help treat new types of cancer. And so that kind of spark and drive has always been what has motivated me to go into cancer research. And today, you know, I'm very fortunate to be studying castration resistance or anti-AR therapy resistance in prostate cancer. And so I get to continue doing that in a different cancer setting, but the work is still just as interesting and just as rewarding.
So what exactly is the project that you're working on in the lab? What's your thesis project?
Yeah, so my thesis project involves this protein that my mentor, or as we call it in the research field, our PI, or principal investigator. So he found this gene called ABI1, which stands for Abelson Interactor 1. It's named for its interaction with another cancer-related gene called Abl kinase. But what we found in the lab is that this gene changes during prostate cancer progression. And over the course of a prostate cancer treatment, this gene will adapt and change forms and gain the ability to bind DNA, which it didn't have kind of prior to or during in a benign prostate tissue, but in the cancer stage will bind DNA. And so our hypothesis is that this DNA binding regulates the cancer progression. And so we're finding ways to both prevent this change as well as find novel targets after this change to see what pathways might get specifically promoted by this DNA binding.
What kind of other opportunities have you guys had as medical students that you can think of at Upstate that are sort of very special to you?
So I've been fortunate enough to go down and visit this collaborator down at the National Cancer Institute. So I spent a week in his lab learning this very specialized technique called laser capture microdissection, which just sounds very fancy, but is really just using a laser to zap out certain areas of a tumor to be able to isolate exactly those cells and not get the contaminating cells around that area of tumor. On histology, tumors are very complex, and they're both specific cancer cells as well as surrounding cells that support the cancer but aren't technically cancerous. And so to be able to isolate those cell subpopulations is important to kind of getting clean data. We've also been fortunate to learn from other visiting scientists who come to our Cancer Center research retreat and give very interesting presentations. And so listening to their talks and hearing about their research can also give us ideas about directions that we can go in as well.
Well, I think something that they started with my year was the longitudinal clinical preceptorship. So that was like working, I worked with Dr. Simone and just like kind of shadowed her and saw what she did day to day. That was like twice a month, I think. And then after I worked with Dr. Simone, I went to the community hospital and shadowed some of the family medicine doctors there. Saw a more, because I'm going into internal medicine and not that family medicine and internal medicine are the same, but they're more similar than radiation oncology is to internal medicine. So seeing like the day-to-day things in the hospital. And then I also, through the three-year program, had to do like an eight-week over the summer course where I was basically starting rotations as like a first year going into my second year. And so I worked with different teams in internal medicine. So I had 4 weeks of general internal medicine and then 4 weeks of elective. So I did 2 weeks of hem-onc and then 2 weeks in the medical ICU. And that was really interesting and kind of gave me a leg up when I started rotations this year because I knew how to use Epic. I knew kind of the flow of like rounds and what to expect on rounds. So that was a good opportunity.
Yeah, so that actually brings up an interesting point. You spoke a little bit about the three-year program. So you both are actually sort of non-traditional medical students in a sense, right? So for everyone who's kind of wondering about what the process is to become, you know, a physician, typically, right, it's you do your undergraduate degree, and then it's 4 years of medical school after that. And then you choose whatever specialty you want to go into, you apply for residency training, and then you hopefully get in and go ahead. But you guys are both not going down that particular path. So Miriam, mm-hmm. you're in the three-year program. What does that sort of entail?
Right. So Upstate, it's something that started with my year. So like technically I should be the class of 2027, but I'll be the class of 2026. And once I got accepted to Upstate, they sent out an email saying, if you know what you want to go into and you want to do medical school in 3 years, here's an opportunity to apply. And there were only a few choices when I first applied. There was like internal medicine, family medicine, psychology. I think there was surgery, and then there was one spot for radiation oncology, and you could apply, do an interview, and then if you got accepted, you were like fast tracking medical school. So I basically don't get like a fourth year, and I don't get any elective time during my rotation. So normally people will have like 5 weeks of elective where they can choose to like take a break or like go and do research or something. So I don't have that. And then I just graduate a year early. So it's nice. It saves me a year of tuition. I also get to start practicing sooner and doing my residency sooner. And it's great because I have guaranteed residency here. So I'll be doing my internal medicine residency, like I said, for the next 3 years at Upstate. And I think they're continuing to add more of the three-year program spots. I think there's some people doing urology now. So it's growing. I think the next they're trying to get like OB-GYN on board, but we'll see. So yeah, it's exciting. And I knew that I wanted to go into oncology. So I thought this would be a good way to fast track kind of getting started.
So when you go and be a resident, you can, the tables will have turned and I will be your med student and you'll be training instead.
There you go. Yeah. It'll come full circle. Yeah. It always does. It always does. I mean, you were my first, like, you know, longitudinal preceptorship wow. student. And here we are, you know.
That's so funny.
I know. It is really funny. And then, Kevin, so you are in the MD-PhD program. You didn't start that way, though.
Yeah, that's right.
So tell us this story about how you ended up this way.
So I applied for medical school in the traditional path. I wasn't super sure that I wanted to dedicate 4 whole years to just entirely do research as part of the MD-PhD program. And so I initially applied just to do MD. But once I got to med school here, I spent a summer doing research in the lab that I am currently in, which is Dr. Lesha Katula's lab. And I was reminded of just how much I loved doing cancer research, being at the bench day to day and conducting different experiments. And so I ultimately decided to do an internal transfer, which is a little bit unusual. And I internally transferred to the MD-PhD program at Upstate during after my first year, so during the second year of medical school. And so as an MD-PhD student here, we generally do our preclinical years, complete step one, and then we enter the lab. During the summers between just before MS1 and just before MS2, most MD-PhD students will do two rotations to try to find a lab that they want to spend the rest of their MD-PhD tenure here in. Because I internally transferred, I essentially did one rotation, but it was a lab that I knew I would love being in, so it was okay. But yeah, so after the first 2 or 1.5 years of med school are done, you then go into the lab for about 4 years. By the end of your fourth year, hopefully you'll have enough data for a paper, and then after submitting the paper, which is the big requirement for PhD graduation, you'll defend your thesis and then go back to med school as a third year student, entering the wards kind of for the first time and relearning how to interact with patients and seeing cases and stuff like that. So a lot of transitions, a lot of different stages of the path, but hopefully all worth it and all
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, yeah. You choose to like get beat up and then get beat up again when you
right,
go back.
Right, in different ways,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, okay. I want to shift gears a little bit and just back up. Can you guys tell me a little bit about what's one thing you really love about Upstate? It's not the location, probably, but maybe.
I actually don't mind the location. I wouldn't say it's my favorite thing, but I love Upstate New York, so I don't mind Syracuse. I think my favorite thing is how collaborative and helpful everyone is at Upstate. Like, I don't feel like there's a culture of like trying to outdo other people or like trying to get to the top, because like we're unranked, we don't really have grades. Like if you pass, you pass. And so I feel like that makes everything more low key, and there's not like a certain number of people that can pass. So everyone wants to help everyone else because we all want to see each other succeed. So I like that about my class. I don't know, you haven't been in classes for a while, but I don't know if you remember that from when you were a student.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and even on our rotations right now, like there's a few of us on a team and we're always helping, like, because I have a little bit more experience. I've already done like 5 rotations. And so some of my friends, this is only their second one. So they're still getting used to like chart reviewing. So taking the time to like show them on Epic how things work, how they can pend orders and look at imaging. And I like that. And I feel like we're pretty close knit here.
I think research wise, it's pretty similar. As a smaller institution, just in terms of size, you get to really interact with the labs around you, which is, I think, pretty unique to Upstate. I did my undergrad research at Cornell down in Ithaca, and being a much larger institution, I very rarely saw my mentor just because he had to deal with so many other students, much less speak to faculty in adjacent labs. And so I think it's pretty unique and exceptional about Upstate is that I can ask questions to the faculty members that are down the hall if I need to use some kind of technique that their lab specializes in, and they're always happy to take the time to show me how to do experiments. So that, again, fosters a very collaborative environment that I think is very good for kind of team building and having people work together and to solve problems together.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of team science that happens here, and I think that's really important. And it also kind of reflects what happens in the clinic as well. You know, there's a ton of multidisciplinary care that happens in oncology. And it's just so important because there is not one doctor that can take care of a cancer patient. It is a team of people. And so it's just really important. And I'm glad you guys are getting that kind of experience as medical students, how important it is to work as a team and collaborate with each other. And I, like you mentioned, Miriam, I really love the idea of non-competitiveness, right? Because we're all trying to succeed together. Yeah. Not, nobody's trying to be the best anything,
right?
You know, I just want the best thing for the patient, right? So speaking of patients, can you reflect on, you know, one of the most meaningful kind of patient interactions that you had, or anything that you recall that kind of sticks out in your mind where you were like, you know, wow, that was a really great interaction? Or maybe not, maybe it was something that really touched you and, you know, made you think, wow, we have to do do better.
I was on my pediatric rotation and I was working with PEDS ID, infectious disease. And there was a patient who came in with his mom. He was an immigrant from Syria and he had really bad scalp infection, like fungal infection on his scalp. His mom couldn't work because she was an immigrant. Like his dad was also staying at home as well. So they didn't really have like a source of income. They were being helped out by a local service here that helps place these new immigrants into homes in the community. The mom broke down in tears during the visit and just said, I don't have any money. Like we were using a translator too for the visit. And she was like, I don't have any money. I can't work. My son gets bullied when he goes to school because of this infection on his scalp. The doctor I was working with, Dr. Domikowski, he's absolutely amazing. I guess there's like an emergency fund that the pediatric ID clinic has. And he gave them a grocery gift card, gave them fruits and vegetables, gave them food from like the staff lounge. And that just like really, really touched me because he didn't have to do that. Like his job as a doctor was to, you know, fix the fungal infection, but he went above and beyond and said, these people need our help, and really just showed the humanistic side of medicine and that we need to not just treat the disease. And even though, like I said, his job was, he could have just prescribed an antifungal and called it a day, but he just did so much more. And I think that it will build trust with this family that, you know, like the medical system isn't evil and these are people that we can trust. And I think also probably made their life a lot easier, at least for the time being.
Kevin, what about you? Do you have any specific interaction or anything that sticks out in your mind as kind of a foundational kind of memory here?
I remember during my second year, we were shadowing in the wards, just working with the internal medicine team. And I saw a patient who had some, I forget exactly what type of cancer he had, but it was late stage and had metastasized. So he was waiting to go to hospice. But we chatted with him for a while, and it turned out that he had been a physician for all of his practicing life. And so he was very gracious of the care that we were giving him. I remember him talking to me as the medical student and just the trainee in the room. And even though he was kind of coming to the end of his life, he gave me some really encouraging and supportive words about how rewarding of a career it would be to go into medicine, to be able to help people. And I guess in this case, it would have been to kind of be the oncologist to help him and make sure that he's feeling as well as he can. And so that, I think, is an interaction that will always stay with me and I'll be reminded of as I go into medicine and see patients on my own.
Yeah, it brings up an important point. I think a lot of the times, you know, I love the wins that we get in oncology, you know, the frank, like, hey, we cured you, which I use that word very tenuously. But, you know, those are great. But I think the ones that really stick are the ones where, you know, we could help somebody at the end of their life, at the end of the disease, right? Where maybe they don't have any support. You know, and here it's us. This is it. And it sort of speaks to that humanistic side of medicine where you really like takes a lot to sit down with somebody and talk to them about their life, talk to them about their life experiences and make them feel like they're still a human, even though they're in the hospital and it's a cold environment and all that stuff, like which we try not to have happen, but inevitably, right? So we're going down memory lane here. Do you guys remember your first day of medical school?
Yeah, it was definitely chaotic. I always describe it as feeling like you're in middle school or high school again, because you enter a new class. There's 160, 180 or so new faces. And for the first time since high school or middle school, everyone's going to be in the same classes doing the same thing at the same time all over again. There's a lot of nervous energy, everyone trying to make friends, not too dissimilar from other first days of school.
Miriam? I also remember my first day. You're like in a room with everyone and they're like handing you like your like goodie bag for the day in the campus activities building. And like they have out these like little foods foods for breakfast, scones and whatever, and no one's taking any. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm sure I was sweating. My face was red. Like, I was so nervous. But yeah, now I look back on it, and I'm like, I'm still friends with some of the people that I met that first day, and I see them on rounds now, or like on the wards now. So
yeah, that nervous energy will last you forever. Yeah. Forever. But what I find really funny also about medical school is that every time there's some large get together, lecture, whatever, there's always food, right? And then medical students get this like bad rap that they're always trying to get free food from everywhere. Yep. So I don't know. Does that kind of follow you guys places, do you think?
Yeah. So there's like this workshop that the IM department's doing called the SAVE workshop. And like no one signed up for it. And then they were like, we'll give you lunch. And then a ton of people signed up for it. So yeah.
And then every day the residents will have lunch from noon to one. And there's always a little bit of leftover food. And so all of us graduate students will line up outside the lecture hall like vultures waiting for the residents to finish. And then afterwards go in and try to steal whatever leftover is there to feed ourselves.
It's true. So if you ever want medical students to show up to something, you need to offer food. That's just the way that it is.
Yep.
To close this out, you guys both had the opportunity to do research in high school, which not everyone has, but if there are people out there who are looking to get into oncology, looking to get into medical school, what are some little advice pearls that you would give to them?
I think definitely just to reach out to people and don't be afraid to put yourself out there. Describe your interests, describe what motivates you, whether it's something that you learned from a biology class or if it's a more personal experience. Reach out to professors either at your college or in nearby institutions and ask how you can get involved or if you can just come and learn for a summer or two. And generally, most people are pretty happy to take students on and mentor hopefully the next generation of scientists. And so don't be afraid of failing. Unfortunately, research is full of taking L's and failing experiments. Almost always don't work the first time around. And so don't be afraid to just try it. Just do it, I guess.
I've torn Kevin's gels like three, four 400 times. Like,
it's okay every time.
Exactly.
Oh dear.
But I agree with everything that Kevin just said. I think getting into medical school or like starting research or like getting any degree, like it's not how smart you are. Like obviously you have to like have like a basic fund of knowledge to get into medical school and you have to take the classes and do all the stuff. But even if you fail, you have to just get up again. Like you were saying, I applied to 31 schools. I got into 3. Like that's pretty low. It only takes one person to say yes. It only takes one school to accept you. For undergrad, I emailed 8 different people the summer before I started at Binghamton asking if I could do research with them or just have a meeting. Only one responded, and that's who I ended up doing research with my whole 4 years at Binghamton. You're gonna get that one yes, like statistically. Just be annoying, keep doing it, like
persistence.
That's the word. Yeah, you need persistence, perseverance.
It's not annoying to us.
Yeah, and just keep reaching out and keep, you know, putting yourself out there, like Kevin was saying.
In oncology research specifically, I mean, how many rejections do we get? Like all the time, grant rejections, publication rejections.
But when you do get that one win, it's so rewarding.
So good.
You can move the needles.
So I want to ask this to you guys because I am genuinely curious about this. I think your generation is kind of at the cusp now where AI is really becoming more readily available. Have you guys found that it helps you at all in your medical career, or how have you used it if you've used it?
This is a great question. I'm an AI hater.
Okay. That's fair too.
No, I mean, like, I feel like AI has its place. I can't not think about like the environmental impacts that AI has and like the amount of water it uses and the amount of energy it takes. So for me, like, as someone who like thinks a lot about how structural inequalities like play into like health in the future, the people who are going to be affected most by like these environmental impacts are like poorer people or people who don't have as many resources. I think also it needs like more regulations too.
That's actually really cool. I never thought about that aspect of AI. So yeah. I think it's fascinating that you brought that up. And I think in research, AI is still, I think AI has a lot of promise, but it's still currently a little dangerous. I remember asking it some research questions at one point, and when it supposedly came up with sources, all of the sources it just made up. And so that becomes a little bit difficult where it's kind of generating things out of thin air, and then you don't actually know what was the proper source, and so you still have to kind of look for those on your own. What I have found it helpful for in some of our graduate school classes is, and in these classes sometimes you'll get a very large breadth of different topics. My program is in the biochemistry department. I don't do a ton of hardcore pure biochemistry in some ways. And so at some point we had to discuss this paper about X-ray crystallography of a very specific protein, and asking kind of ChatGPT to explain to me what those different terms that they're talking about are was really helpful, and kind of helped get everyone up to speed about this very niche research topic that only maybe one person in the room was actually doing day to day.
That's fair.
I just thought it was an interesting question because, you know, you guys are of the generation that it may actually start to become real.
I was actually part of this like focus group about AI in medicine. And so that was interesting. And I was a hater in the focus group too.
That's funny.
And all, like everything it's trained on too, like in terms of like, if you ask it like a medical question, it's all coming from like previous textbooks. If those textbooks have like racism or sexism in them, that's what the AI is like feeding back to you as well. So
yeah.
And someone still has to come up with the data set for it to learn on. So right. Someone's still got to write that textbook and make sure that it's written properly. Latest edition. So.
Right.
How do you guys view your future in cancer research?
I think that it's exciting. My future personally, I hope to continue researching. Like, even though I'm not getting my PhD, I hope to continue like doing like clinical research in the future. I'll definitely have to get involved like as a resident here. Like, I know we have to do a capstone project. So hopefully finding a mentor to work with, and even as like a medical student, maybe when I finish my rotations, getting more involved when I'm on my acting internship, doing some more clinical research. I'm excited. I think, like I said, the future of oncology is always changing. There's always new research, always new drugs, always new treatments. So yeah, it's kind of exciting.
I definitely agree. I'm not sure if I want to be a full-time lab principal investigator for my career. I do think that's very challenging, and just practically speaking, I don't know if that will be the ultimate career at the end, but I do think that this PhD training will kind of help me always keep in mind the mechanisms that underlie cancer. I do want to be a physician in the cancer field, and so to be able to have that strong understanding will hopefully allow me to make better decisions about patient care, as well as stay a little bit more kind of knowledgeable about the cutting edge of treatment paradigms. And so,
all right. Well, thank you guys for joining me. It's been so much fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I wish you guys luck in your future careers, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
That wraps up today's conversation on the road to becoming a physician and a cancer researcher. The journey isn't easy, but it's one filled with purpose, discovery, and the opportunity to change lives. I hope this episode has given you insight into the training, the passion, and the resilience that it takes to make science and medicine come alive for patients. Remember, the breakthroughs of tomorrow start with the dedication of today's students and researchers. If you're interested in getting information about the academic programs offered at Upstate, please visit the Prospective Students page at www.upstate.edu/prospective. Additionally, you can pop over to the Upstate Cancer Research website at www.upstate.edu/cancer/research if you're interested in learning more about the current cancer research happening right here at Upstate. If you enjoyed listening in today, don't forget to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for joining us on Pipettes to Patients, where every discovery brings us one step closer to hope. Until next time, stay informed and stay empowered.